Hi, and welcome to Faith Points, a weekly podcast from Faith Point United Methodist Church. If you'd like to join us for worship on Sunday morning, or just want some more info, visit us on the web at faithpointum.org, or you can find us on Twitter at twitter.com/faithpointum, or you can find us on Facebook. And now, a weekly message from Pastor Chris Bishop.
Well, this summer we have been working through the Bible in its entirety. So if you take your bulletin out, that front cover kind of tells the story about where we've been and where we are and where we're going. And if you just kind of work down that list, a few weeks ago, so 2 weeks ago, we started off with this idea that God is bigger than big and closer than close, that God created all of these things, seen and unseen, and yet at the same time, God had dinner every night with Adam and Eve and those first who were created, until the time where we decided that we knew God's way over our way. And that's depicted in that kind of second layer of us seeing that our choices then have ramifications. And even in the midst of that, there is grace. And last week, we see on that third line down, we kind of paired with our vacation Bible school and talked about the way that this guy Moses led God's people because of this friction in Egypt that allowed them or that spurred them to move past that into the unknown, into God's preferred future for them. And we kind of overlaid that with our story of Moses and God's people being oppressed right there with the Lion King and talked about how they're almost the same story, that Moses and Simba share a lot of that same kind of DNA about who they are and whose they came to be and the ways in which God makes this restorative act when both of those two characters came back, Moses from being a murderer in Egypt to go flee to be a sheep farmer, then seeing this burning bush and coming back because of the oppression of the people. And of course, in The Lion King, Simba leaving because of the death of his father, coming back to then restore what is Pride Rock that they're going up there. And so then we stopped there a little bit with the people of God leaving Egypt, leaving what they had known, even though that was slavery and oppression and everything else, stepping out into the wilderness. And like Jillian was reading for us today, that this encounter of the people going, man, it would have been better for us to be in Egypt than to go into the wilderness, that is the desert. And what we find is that it took God about a year to get the people of Israel out of Egypt, but then it took about 40 years for Egypt to get out of the people of Israel. And isn't that the way it is with our lives, that we kind of hang on to some of that baggage that we have, those hurts, habits, and hang-ups that we kind of maybe struggled with at one point? Man, we have been forgiven, we have moved past, or God has moved past that, but we just choose to hold on to it. And so that's kind of where we are right now, is we're in this little bit of a time frame. If you're kind of keeping track on your bulletin, we're down at those tablets because that's our Ten Commandments that we'll get to in a minute. But as we are looking at the wilderness, as we're talking about that, at the Bishop House, we've been watching reruns of the Survivor TV show. Anybody ever watch Survivor or like have those times and places, right? So what happens often at our house is that my wife Katie and I will watch a show together for like the first 3 episodes, and then she just blazes through, okay? And so like, I don't know, part of it is that I can't sit still, and she can sit and do work and multitask, and I can't do that. I have to move or do something. And so the other day, like we were watching this one episode or one set of shows, and then it like shifted and like, hey, what happened to that guy? And not only had he been voted off, but like voted off 3 seasons ago, right? And so we came in. But there are these 2 things that I learned this week about Survivor and how they kind of relate to God's people in this story of where they are. And so one of them was that that there was this this girl that in her New York City living life was a model, and she had gotten kicked off to what they call Exile Island. Essentially, it's hey, you know, let's separate you from community and everything else. You get a time out for the day. And so while she was there, she didn't have time to make fire before the rain started. She didn't have any shelter or any cover or anything like that. And so one of the things that she said was, you know, that she was so shocked that even when she went through all of that, it wasn't about winning the game at that point. It was about proving to herself who she was and how strong she was. Isn't that interesting, right? Like that there's this personal growth that happens there. And then the other piece, so is that you know, when there are no rules, we get to choose the kind of kingdom that we're building. And so when we look at the way that this girl was on Exile Island, or when we see the way that folks come together and they are stronger than they are with all the luxuries of life, we realize, like God's people, that in the wilderness, even though that may not be your preferred location, that it does start to form who we are, right? When you strip down and strip away all the stuff that we surround ourselves with, when we figure out what is most important, those are those times and places that are like the catalyst of our identity forming things. And so, like, if you are married and you think about early in your marriage, can you think of some situations where, like, early on you may have not had, you know, money, you may not have had that, you had that like first apartment or something like that, where you just look back and finally go, I don't know how we made it through that, but man, those were some of the best times. Anybody there with me? Like, yeah, hey, right? Like, I remember thinking our first apartment, Katie and I, or an apartment that Katie and I had, we were waiting for what would be our parsonage to be ready for us. But for about a year, we were living in this apartment where, you know, we would just see in news reports about, like, how the development over had a shooting or this or that, or we had to, like, sneak our dog up to our third floor because he got way too big to be acceptable by the apartment folks. But like, what are you gonna do? I mean, he was this big when we showed them to him, but we didn't tell him that he was a German Shepherd. And then he got this big in 2 weeks and this big. And, you know, like those types of stories, though, allow us to find our identity. And that's what happened with God's people in the wilderness, in the desert, is that there is this identity that is given, not because of the luxury that they find themselves in, but because of the sparseness and the dependence on God that they find. And so then, like Jillian talked about, they found themselves by this mountain, and Moses goes up and he gives them these 10 kind of top 10 lifts or rules about how to then kind of love God and love other people. If we kind of divide it out, there's 4 about loving God and there's 6 about how we love and be in community with one another. And so we realize that we find our identity most often in the hardship, in those dark nights of the soul, and in those places that feel like dry wilderness. And then the second thing that we learn is that when there are no rules, like in Survivor, when there's a blank slate, we get to choose the way that we are going to live our lives. Just like some players decide that from day one, that they are going to lie, cheat, and steal their way to that $1 million, right? And then there are others who are idealistic and think, well, I'm going to play the game with integrity, so at least if I look back on this experience 20 years later, at least I know that I did the right thing. And so I'm going to try to build that integrity into the kingdom, into the tribe, into the people that I am with in a way that at least allows me to play the game with honor. And so, as we see God's people kind of being this covenant people, what happens is that the way that they relate to God is that God becomes, or God is, that ruler, that king, that head, and that there are these things called judges, or these people called judges, so that when trouble arises, these they're kind of like prophets, but also kind of like God's bouncers or enforcers at times, right? And so that's where we get these characters like Samson or you know, Deborah, or these people that then have this opportunity that this cycle of orientation, and God, you are God, and we don't have to be, and that is fantastic, to disorientation of the people forgetting about God, to then this dramatic plea of God, please help us. And then a judge is sent, and something happens, and there's restoration, and there's orientation, and disorientation, and lament, and petition, and it keeps going like that until we see that Samuel's there, and his sons are running amok, and everybody else is coming and having this conversation with him, going, your kids are out of control. Now look, as a pastor on Sunday mornings with his kids here often, man, I know what that kind of out of controlness is like, right? They're quiet right now, but in a moment's notice, they could go bananas, and that's okay. However, because they're not paying attention, because I could say anything about them right now. Right, Bethy? She's like, what? Right, but so this conversation happens, and the solution of the people is to look around and say, everyone else has a king. We want to be like everyone else because I'm sure that it's going to work just fine for us if we are going to be like everyone else. And so God makes sure that Samuel, who's bringing this message, is very clear with them and says, look, oftentimes we get ourselves as a people in the most trouble when God gives us exactly what we ask for, right? And so they say, we want a king. And then God says to his prophet, he says, all right, make sure, number one, you know that they're not rejecting you, they're rejecting me. That this is that season of disorientation. And so you know what I'm going to do? This time I'm just going to give them exactly what they want, because if there is a king there. But secondly, then, I want you to explain to them the ramifications that come with playing under this new set of rules, that instead of me being king, and the kingdom not being bound by geography or desire for more wealth, for God is king, it's the boundaries are the entire creation. And the goal was that everyone is reconciled. And so if we want to change the rules, that's okay, but know the implications. And so that's presented, and the people are like, yeah, give us a king. That's what we want. We want a king. Of course we want a king, right? Because everybody else has a king. So let's do that. But by and large, it doesn't go well for the people because they suddenly, they felt odd without a king. But then the ramifications happen, and it doesn't go well. It's almost like us looking at the highlight reel of people's lives through social media and going, man, I wish I had that. But we don't see the 45 minutes of prep to get that shot or the crying conversations that happened to lead up to that point, or all the frustration and everything else and the implications of the way that things were. We just see the highlights and we go, that's exactly what I want. And what happens is that they felt like their truth, God's people felt like their truth of a God who is not bound by time, space, or anything else, then are odd. And they didn't want to be odd. But I think that the reality is that for us as people of faith, that our faith changes us in a way that we have a God that calls us to be odd because odd is what we are made to be. Now, I want to read you a little bit from this book called Messy Spirituality. It's by a guy named Mike Iaconelli, and we've gone through it a little bit before, but Mike is like my, have you ever had those authors that are just like, they hit and tune your soul? Like what they write is like, I couldn't say it better. And so there's this chapter that's entitled Odd Discipleship, and he offers this this great illustration of how there was this elementary class, and they were going to put on a play, and the play was going to be Cinderella. And so all the girls wanted to be Cinderella, and they were kind of vying for that part, and all the guys wanted to be the prince, and they were kind of going back and forth, and there's only so many the kids want to do, except for this one boy. His name was Norman, and Norman said, I want to be the pig. And if you know the story of Cinderella, especially the Disney version, there's not a pig in there. And so, I'm sure with all the elementary training that this teacher had, she looked at Norman and goes, Norman, there is no pig. And he said, in this story, there is. Yeah, Norman, that's right. And he's like, all right. And so Norman made his own costume with a cup as a nose, and his whole job was to follow Cinderella around, and he imitated and he reflected the emotion that she had, right? And then when it gets to the crescendo part where she meets her Prince Charming and everything is wonderful, Norman the pig, with excitement, reflecting that joy, barks. And the teacher goes in the dress rehearsal, Norman, pigs don't bark. And you know what he said? This one does. Right. And so at the time where it was coming in, there were all these teachers. The story goes that there were also all these teachers and supervisors at this play to kind of have this illustration. And there was this standing ovation at the end, not necessarily because of the other players, but because of Norman, because of the way that he was willing to be the real Cinderella in that story, showcasing and sharing the way that, you know, even when our play script says there is no place here for you, Norman was incredulous enough to say, actually, yeah, there is. And so Iaconelli writes this. This is so fantastic because I really love it, right? He says, Norman was so like Jesus. The religious leaders of the day had written a script for the Messiah, and when Jesus announced that he was that Messiah, the Pharisees and others screamed at him. There's no Jesus in this Messiah script. Messiahs don't hang out with losers. Our Messiah doesn't break all the rules. Messiah doesn't ask questions of our leadership or threaten the religious authority. Or Messiahs don't disregard his reputation by befriending riffraff or frequent the haunts of the questionable people. The Bible says the notorious sinners. Isn't that a great phrase, right? And what does Jesus reply? This Messiah does. Yes. You see, Iaconelli writes, this is what we call the good news, that Christianity proclaims that it is an equal opportunity faith open to all in spite of the abundance of playwrights in the church who are more anxious to announce. Now listen to this list, okay? When I get done the list, if you find yourself in this list, I'm going to invite you to stand up, okay? So there are so many people in the church, these playwrights that say there are parts for you and you and you and you, that these playwrights announce that there is no place in Christianity if you wear earrings, if you have a tattoo, if you drink wine, if you have too many questions, if you look weird, if you smoke, if you dance, if you haven't been filled with the Holy Spirit, if you're baptized or swear or have pink hair, or in my wife's case, purple hair, all of those who are in the wrong ethnic group or have a nose ring or have had an abortion or are gay or lesbian or are too conservative or liberal. There are too many playwrights that say there is no place for you. Now, church, if you heard your place in there, stand up. Now look, this is the thing, okay? And this is why it's the good news, is because all of us are odd. I am odd. I find myself on that list in a number of different places. You can have a seat, okay? But if we stand up and say that this is the kind of God that we serve, that then all of us, and with a resounding voice, says, you know, when everyone else says that there is no space for you, that there is no part for you here, that every single one of us who are standing up go, but there is now. That's what we're giving up when we say that we want to be the same like everyone else. Because the everyone else says, well, you have to be this much. You have to be, you know, you have to perform this much. You have to earn this much. You have to be good at this, you know, you have to get these grades. You have to do all of these things. If you don't, there is no place for you. There's no place for the barking pig in our story. And Jesus says, absolutely there is, right? That's what we give up when we ask for the king. And so when we think about this, you know, there's this beautiful part, and this is almost the last part, but man, Iaconelli speaks to my soul here, right? So when Israel asks about being the same as everybody else, Iaconelli says, the sameness is a disease with disastrous consequences. Woo, right? Differences are ignored, uniqueness isn't listened to, and our gifts are canceled out. Is that the kind of church that you want to be a part of? Is that the kind of world that you want to be a part of? Or in God, in all of God's wonder and creativity, even back to the back of creation, where there is diversity and gift and grace, is sculpting and creating this wonderfully crazy, odd world, going, look at the beauty of my creation. It is good. And we go, but we want to be the same as everybody else. No. And so the call for us, the call for us is to lean into our oddness, lean into our weirdness, lean into the story and diversity that we have and ask the question, you know, are we building a kingdom that is reflective of the way that God is acting and moving today? Are we taking our block and trying to just use our singular block to build up our own kingdom that is is really small? Or are we willing to build the kind of community that allows us to build not just something that is bigger than ourselves, but is bigger than we can ever imagine, because it is a connected community through time and space in a way that then sets up the future for not just a future that we can provide, but brings heaven closer so that we can be the people that are bringing heaven and earth closer together. This week, we're going to end with Iaconelli's words. And man, oh man, if you want a copy of this book, I'll give you mine. I'll buy you a copy. I don't care, because it is, like, the whole thing is like this, okay? But as we think about the way, and as I have been reminded of the way that so many times Faith Point lives into that moniker that some folks say that Faith Point's a land of misfit Christians. I love it. Iaconelli writes this. And Iaconelli, he says, he pastored the slowest growing church in North America at one point, is his claim to fame, and the wonders and the stories he tells. I go, man, that's just like here. But he writes, I wonder how many of us have turned away from Jesus, given up hope of the spiritual because we don't fit. I wonder how many of us have turned away from Jesus, given up our spiritual hope because we don't fit, because we aren't like everyone else, because Christianity seems so different and strange from the rest of the churches. I wonder if we realize how anxious Jesus is to reach out and walk with us arm and arm. Our call is to build a community that welcomes and connects each and every odd one of us with the other, so that we can be the people, not that just ask for the sameness, but that allows God to be God so that we don't have to be, and then to build that kingdom up in a way that best reflects the love that God has for each and every one of us. And it's gonna look odd and weird, and there's gonna be barking pigs, there's gonna be barking dogs, there's gonna be kids making noise and blocks falling down. It's gonna be messy, but man, it's also gonna be way more fun. Let's pray. God of grace, God of grace, God of grace. It is that grace that keeps us going on. It is that grace that allows us to sing. It is it is that grace that allows us to trust that your justice will prevail, because God, your grace allows us to be your church. God, as we go throughout this week, allow us to more fully trust that you are God and that we don't have to be, and allow us to build your kingdom here and now, for those longing to find their role, even if one has not yet been written for it, God. Allow all of us, barking pigs and all, to be those people that you have made us to be. Amen. Let's stand and sing.